Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the November NJEDA Board Meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press one then zero on your telephone keypad to be placed in the queue to speak and provide comment. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. And if you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the number. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star then zero. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Kevin Quinn. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Tim, if you could read the open public meeting notice.
Sure. Good morning, Chairman. Good morning, everyone. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice this meeting has been sent to the Star-Ledger and the Times of Trent at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Tim. Muneer, if we could do a roll call, please.
Yes. Chairman Kevin Quinn.
Here.
Virginia Bauer.
Here.
Robert Shimko.
Here.
Marcia Marley. Marcia Marley. Okay. Fred Dumont.
Here.
Rosemarie Hicks. Phil Elagia. Norvine Giblin from the Governor's Office.
Here.
State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo.
Here.
Commissioner Caridi, Department of Banking and Insurance.
Present.
Roberto Savarenas for Commissioner Angelo for the Department of Labor.
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon for DEP Commissioner Sean Lazarette.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Good morning. Great. Aisha Glover is on as well.
Okay. Good morning, Aisha.
All right. Thank you, Muneer. We have two sets of meeting minutes here, one from our regular meeting minutes, one from executive session on October 12th. And again, when we're in this hybrid or virtual setting, I just ask that the board members state their name when making the motion or seconding. So before you, you have the October 12th regular meeting minutes. For your review and approval, can I get a motion to approve?
Caridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Can I get a second?
Glover, second.
Thank you, Aisha. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Any
Chairman, it's Jenny. I'm sorry, it's Jenny Bauer. I was absent, so I guess I recuse myself. Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny. Any other recusals or abstentions? All right, moving on to our executive session meeting minutes from October 12th. Can I get a motion to approve?
Caridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Can I get a second?
Dragon, second.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Same recusal, Jenny.
Thank you, Jenny. Any other recusals or abstentions? All right, I'll move to my chair remarks for today. As we all eagerly anticipate the winter holidays are upon us, many small businesses are better positioned than they were a year ago thanks to the NJEDA programs. And programs focused on non-retail businesses that are also having an impact. More than 1,000 businesses have been approved for assistance, totaling over $25 million through the Small Business Lease Grant and Small Business Improvement Grant programs. These programs are centered around Governor Phil Murphy's goal for a more equitable, inclusive economy. Our lease grant, more than 48% of the approved businesses are minority-owned and 45% women-owned. On our improvement grant, 32% of the approved businesses are minority-owned and 39% women-owned businesses. We also hit a milestone with the Main Street Lenders Grant, awarding over $11 million to 8 lenders and financial institutions. These local lenders support New Jersey's smallest businesses, and they remain vital partners in our efforts to build a more resilient economy moving forward. With a focus on small business as we approach Thanksgiving, followed by Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday, and the weeks of holiday hustle and bustle that follow, I encourage you to shop in your communities. They are all eagerly awaiting the opportunity to serve you. And don't forget to support veteran-owned small businesses as well. The EDA celebrated National Veteran Small Business Week this past month by promoting EDA-supported veteran-owned businesses on its social media pages. Staff also participated in events highlighting issues faced by veterans and military spouse business owners. These EDA programs for businesses outside of the retail sector are having an impact as well. Earlier this month, the EDA team joined First Lady Tammy Murphy at ABC Academy in Bloomfield to announce the opening of applications on November 15th for the Child Care Facilities Improvement Grant. The application received an overwhelming response, offering grants of $50,000 to $200,000 to help eligible child care centers make critical improvements to their facilities. And our NJ ZIP program continues to support entities statewide. The program helps businesses offset the cost of purchasing new zero-emission, medium-duty vehicles for small businesses. To date, 206 vouchers have been awarded, representing $39 million in assistance. These programs detailed above have provided tens of millions in support for New Jersey small businesses, which have proven their resilience and commitment to their communities over these last tough few years. And the team continues to look for ways to help businesses overcome challenges. Let's make sure we all continue to show our appreciation for them by making a point of shopping small, not only over the holidays, but all year round. And while I'm talking, I want to wish all of you a happy Thanksgiving with your family and friends next week. Tim, I'll turn it over to you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A fair bit to report on. I think you have a written report that goes into this in more detail. But it's been a busy month, as the fall tends to be, for activity with our programs and out in the world. We've continued to be active. The construction activity at the wind port continues to move along at an incredible level of productivity. We're about to click past. We're not quite there. I would have loved to have had this to say this more definitively. We're about to be at 100,000 hours of building and construction trade union trade hours at the site, almost 100,000 hours. The men and women of the South Jersey building trades are doing an incredible job building that facility and keeping it on time and on budget. So it's been a great progress down there. But a few items related to the wind port coming up in a few minutes. We have continued to make progress on some of our efforts around diversifying the economy and thinking about new industries like esports. We cut the ribbon on a new esports innovation center that we're doing in part. We, the EDA, are doing in partnership with Stockton down in Atlantic City on the boardwalk. Next time you're on the boardwalk, stop by. There's old video games that hang out there just for fun. It's a pretty cool space right on the boardwalk at Stockton's amazing waterfront campus down there. So that was something we've created or invested in back in May of 2021 to support the esports industry and make New Jersey one of the early leaders in that new industry. We also launched, the governor and a number of us were in Eatontown in October to launch the manufacturing voucher program that had been approved at our last board meeting. We're going to start taking applications for that in late December. Again, that's the first of its kind manufacturing program, manufacturing direct grant voucher support program, up to $250,000 in bonuses for buying New Jersey-made products. Kathleen and some of the other our other colleagues are actually at the New Jersey MEP board meeting this morning, talking that program up, drumming up interest in that program, and meeting with manufacturers just today. On the film and TV side of the equation, we launched the application for the Film Studio Partners Program. We actually have our first application in, and so that's an important milestone. Again, we are eagerly working and supporting the development not just of the film industry broadly, but brick-and-mortar studios, because that's how we think we get the long-term job creation and most durable economic growth out of the film industry is through film studios. The tax incentive programs that Governor Murphy have enacted are really critical to that. The other thing I just mentioned real quickly is the Small Business Bonding Readiness Program. We had an event with the in Newark a couple weeks ago with both the African American Chamber of Commerce and the statewide Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, who are our two partners in that program, visiting a small business in Newark owned by a Newark resident, a woman who started her business a few years ago, has grown quite a bit after having gone through the Bonding Readiness Program, and a great testimony to the efforts around capacity building and building a more diverse and inclusive New Jersey economy. The other thing I'd highlight just real quick, and the chairman mentioned it, we launched the child care grant program yesterday. It went really well. We have a number of applications in, a number of applications started, and we're excited about making a significant impact there. The Washington Post had a story yesterday, the day before, a record number of Americans reported in the month of October missing work because of lack of child care. Over 100,000 Americans reported that. So this is a great and growing challenge, and a reminder that yes, of course, it's important for our kids to have great child care. It's also important for our economy to have the economic infrastructure underpinning of a safe and affordable and reliable child care system. So that's why the governor is making these investments. With that, I'll join the chairman in wishing everyone a happy Thanksgiving. I haven't figured out pies yet, but I guess I got to work on that this weekend. But I'm excited, obviously, to have time with our family, and everyone enjoys time with their family as well. With that, we've got a full agenda to get through. So, Mr. Chairman, I will yield the floor back to you.
Great. Thank you, Tim.
Mr. Chairman, this is Danielle. I'm sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to share that we are joined by board members Marcia Marley and Rosemary Hicks.
Great. Thank you, Danielle. First, two items on the agenda related to policies. Chair of the Policy Committee, let me highlight a few of the items we'll be covering. The award of the New Jersey Asset Activation Planning Grants, creation of the Clean Energy Business Financing Program, a co-lending program that offers term loans to eligible small businesses seeking to finance eligible clean energy projects to create jobs in New Jersey, the creation of the New Jersey Innovation Fellows Program, a program to support first-time entrepreneurs with mentorship training and income replacement capital, and an agreement with Atlantic City Electric for the procurement of materials necessary to connect the New Jersey wind port to the power grid. So let's move on to our agenda. Award of New Jersey Asset Activation Planning Grants, Jason Miller, Senior Planner, Community Development, presenting. Jason.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Morning, everyone. The New Jersey Asset Activation Planning Grant Program is presenting its first two recommendations to the board for grant award today for the Meadowlands 2040 Foundation and Rutgers University. This program was created to provide grants of up to $50,000 to public, private, or nonprofit entities for pre-development planning activities of projects that activate distressed and underutilized public assets. The board approved this program in March 2022. We began accepting applications at the end of July, and the 90-day acceptance period recently closed on October 24th. NJEDA has received 9 more applications in addition to the 2 presented here today, one which has been withdrawn, and 8 others during the last week of the acceptance window. Staff is currently reviewing those applications and will follow up with the board if they are to be approved. Applications are reviewed, scored, and recommended for award in the order in which they are submitted until the award pool of $400,000 of ERF funding is exhausted. Applications are not competitively scored against each other, but they must meet a minimum score of 65 points out of 100 to demonstrate their ability to successfully complete the proposed planning activities and gauge the improved utilization of the public asset. There are 5 components to the overall score of the application: asset impact, purpose and merits of the project, the applicant's previous experience, community engagement, and the municipal revitalization index score. The Meadowlands 2040 Foundation Incorporated has requested $50,000 in grant funding to complete a comprehensive study of a potential convention center / conference center to replace the former Izod Sports Arena in Meadowlands Sports and Entertainment District. An initial analysis was already conducted by a planning consultant to gauge interest and refine the project's concept. This included business sector engagement at the 2021 MDES Thought Leaders Conference and other events, as well as collecting data and feedback from public officials and stakeholders. Grant funding will continue their efforts with a detailed concept design, market analysis, and financial feasibility study. Staff have determined that the MetaLens 2040 Foundation application meets all program requirements, and we are recommending approval of the grant. Rutgers University is seeking $50,000 in funding to assess building code requirements and complete conceptual designs to create what will be the largest makerspace facility in New Jersey as an adaptive reuse of the 30,000-square-foot former State Agricultural Museum of New Jersey in Rutgers Cook campus. Previous studies were conducted to select a cost-effective reuse for the facility and engage with various community stakeholders. Staff had determined Rutgers' application meets all program requirements, and we are recommending approval for their grant. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have about the program or our recommendations.
Great. Thank you, Jason. Do we have any questions for Jason? If we have no questions for Jason, can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Thank you, Jason. Next item, SSBCI, Clean Energy Business Financing Program, Marta Cabral. Senior Project Officer, Clean Energy, presenting. Marta.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everyone. I'm here to present a memo requesting that the board approve the creation of the Clean Energy Business Financing Program, a co-lending program that offers term loans to eligible small businesses seeking to finance clean energy projects that create jobs in New Jersey. The program will utilize $80 million from New Jersey's allotment of funds from the U.S. Treasury's State Small Business Credit Initiative, contingent on final approval of the SSBCI application by U.S. Treasury. This program is one of the six programs that the NJEDA brought to the board in February 2022 as part of an MOU with New Jersey Treasury to receive the SSBCI funds once allocated. The memo also requests that the board approve delegated authority for transactions of up to $3 million to the chief executive officer. A brief overview of the program. This will be an open window co-lending program that will either originate companion loans in parallel with private lenders or purchase participation in loans originated by private lenders. The private lenders under this program will all be from NJEDA's existing list of premier lenders. The program is designed to support small businesses' clean energy projects, which may include infrastructure projects, the installation of clean energy improvements at an existing facility, or the creation or expansion of clean energy manufacturing or service businesses. Loans using SSBCI funds will be up to $10 million for terms between 1 and 25 years at a rate of 3% below that of the private lender, and all loans will be secured but subordinate to the private lender and collateral. The program also offers concessional terms for New Jersey-certified minority, women, and veteran-owned businesses and for businesses whose projects are located in an overburdened community. These businesses will receive an additional 1% interest rate reduction and the possibility of receiving 10% loan forgiveness if they meet the required job creation metric when assessed at the five-year mark or at the end of the loan term, whichever is sooner. As an open window program, applications will be reviewed on a rolling basis. As part of their application, potential borrowers will identify their private lender and include a description of their proposed financing arrangement. Complete applications will be reviewed to assess eligibility and evaluated using a set of standardized scoring criteria. Applicants will be required to receive a minimum score of 50 out of 100 points in order to be eligible for the program. In closing, this memo is to request approval for an $80 million clean energy business financing program using SSBCI funds and for delegated authority for the CEO to approve transactions of up to $3 million. Thank you all for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions at this time.
Do we have any questions for Marta?
Hi, this is Rosemary. I have a couple questions. I guess I'm a little confused as to what this program is doing. Can you give me like a, maybe a little more
specific example? I know there's something about batteries, but is it clean energy to retrofit an existing building to bring it up to current codes? I'm a little confused as to what this program is doing. Secondly, in terms of the financing, the business financing, if the person is leasing the building versus owning the building, are those sort of arrangements part of the eligibility, or can it be? And then the third question is that when you talk about loan capability and having something from the bank to say that the funds are available, are we breaking that out or having, let's say, an adjustment for smaller, more micro businesses than small businesses? Because, again, there's a big delta between small and micro. So we're talking overburdened communities. Is this primarily going to impact large, small businesses versus more the micro businesses that are more entrenched in these communities? So I hope you got those questions.
Yes, I'm happy to answer those questions. So with regards to your first question about what types of projects this Clean Energy Business Financing Program could support, it is designed to be able to support a wide range of projects, and I'll give a few examples. One of them could be, as you mentioned, installing or purchasing a clean energy improvement at a small business's existing facility. So an example of that could be upgrading to high-efficiency boilers at a factory, or even purchasing a zero-emission medium or heavy-duty electric vehicle, for example. It could also finance clean energy infrastructure projects, for example, solar plus energy storage and distributed energy resource projects. And then it could even go further in supporting the creation or expansion of small businesses that are manufacturing clean energy products or their integral components. So it could be, for example, supporting a manufacturer of electric vehicle batteries, as you mentioned, I think, as well. And then one last final example of the type of project that it could support is creating or expanding a small business that offers a clean energy service. So let's say, for example, a small business that improves building envelopes through the installation of more energy-efficient insulation, windows, or a different type of component, that could be something that would be eligible for this loan. I'll move on to answering your other two questions, and I'm happy to provide more examples or clarification as needed on the first one. In terms of whether an applicant is able to qualify for this program if it's leasing a facility rather than owning it, the loan proceeds have to be used for business purposes only. However, one of the eligible loan uses as part of this program includes the purchase, construction, renovation, or tenant improvements of an eligible place of business, as long as it's not for passive real estate investment purposes. So I believe that, yes, an applicant that's leasing the building could qualify for this loan program. And then with regards to supporting larger small businesses versus micro businesses, this is something that we've actually taken into consideration and put an emphasis on through our scoring criteria. So one of the ways that applicants can receive additional points is if they are a business with a smaller number of employees. So we have as one of the criteria that on a sliding scale, the fewer the employees, the higher points the applicant can get. We did that specifically to target small businesses, including micro businesses. So that's something we've tried to take into consideration in developing the program.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have other questions for Marta?
We have no other questions for Marta.
Make a motion.
Fred, thank you. Can I get a second?
Second.
Thank you, Robert. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's move to the next item. New Jersey Offshore Wind Workforce and Skills Development Grant Challenge Amendment. Jen Becker, Managing Director, Wind Institute Development, presenting. Jen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. The members are asked to approve an amendment to the New Jersey Offshore Wind Workforce and Skills Development Grant Challenge, which was approved by the EDA Board on September 14, 2022. The Grant Challenge is part of EDA's development of the Wind Institute for Innovation and Training. In line with the Wind Institute's objective to accelerate the development of a robust and diverse offshore wind workforce, the Grant Challenge is a competitive funding program for applicants that can provide workforce training, job placement, and wraparound services such as transportation and childcare, with a particular focus on serving New Jersey overburdened communities. All applications for the Grant Challenge must include at least one community-based organization with demonstrated experience serving a New Jersey overburdened community, and all applications will be evaluated based on how well they will serve overburdened communities. Applications for the Grant Challenge have not yet opened. As originally structured, this program permitted private for-profit entities, public governmental entities, and nonprofit organizations to apply as primary applicants, and per the authority's rules, required a $1,000 non-refundable application fee. However, staff believe that requiring all applicants to pay a $1,000 non-refundable fee will dissuade organizations, specifically public and nonprofit entities, that are best positioned to develop training programs focused on overburdened communities from applying. Our current fee rules do not provide the flexibility to simply waive all fees for a program, but do allow for fee waivers only when imposing the fee would create an undue financial hardship for the applicant. A $1,000 application fee is unlikely to impose an undue financial hardship for most private for-profit entities, but in contrast, would do so for most governmental entities and nonprofits, including community-based organizations, as these types of entities do not typically have significant unrestricted disposable funds. As such, these entities are unlikely to risk paying $1,000 with no guarantee of getting a grant and thus not apply. In order to achieve the goal of benefiting overburdened communities and ensure resources are provided to groups well-positioned to develop training programs for these communities, the Board is asked to approve two amendments. The first, excluding private entities from the type of eligible primary applicants. With this amendment, private for-profit entities may still be part of an applicant team and receive a portion of the grant funds as detailed in an awarded proposal. However, they may not be a primary applicant. By making this change, the Grant Challenge is focused on providing resources to public and nonprofit entities who are best positioned to develop workforce training with wraparound services that are focused on overburdened communities as the primary applicant. The second, waiving the standard $1,000 non-refundable application fee. Once private for-profit entities are no longer eligible as primary applicants, eligible applicants will be public entities such as public schools and county colleges and nonprofits, including but not limited to community-based organizations. As noted, these types of organizations do not typically have unrestricted disposable funds that could be utilized for the $1,000 non-refundable application fee, and charging fees, particularly non-refundable fees, for grant funding for workforce training is highly unusual. Imposing such a fee would constitute an undue financial hardship. By waiving the fee, the program will become more accessible to community-based organizations and other public and nonprofit entities that serve overburdened communities and improve the chances that the program does indeed benefit such communities. To note, the authority does not need to collect application fees to cover the cost of this program because the authority's administrative costs will be covered by utilizing funds appropriated for the administration of Wind Institute-related programs. In sum, the members are asked to approve the amendments to restrict private entities as a primary applicant and waive application fees for the New Jersey Offshore Wind Workforce and Skills Development Grant Challenge. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen. Do we have any questions for Jen?
Hi, this is Maria. Jen, I have a couple questions. Am I understanding that you're saying that we're excluding the private for-profit from being the primary, but they can be the secondary, meaning that if I'm a CDFI, I become the primary, I win the award, and I subcontract that work back to a private for-profit, correct?
So You are correct in that we are saying that a private entity would not be able to be the primary applicant, but applicants can come in with collaborators, so different organizations that they're working to implement the proposed program and having different roles on the project. And so a private entity could be part of the applicant team. They would just not be eligible to be the primary applicant. I wouldn't necessarily refer to it as subcontracting because it was, you're coming in with a grant. As part of the required application materials, you have to identify in your budget who's getting what portion of the grant. So we're looking at collaborators. But yes, the for-profit entity would no longer be able to be a primary applicant.
Can they be a partner or collaborator with multiple NFIs, CBFIs?
So a private for-profit entity could be part of an applicant team and receive funding as part of the selected proposal, but they would not be able to be the primary applicant that EDA would enter into the grant agreement with.
Correct, but if I am in a overburdened community in the city of Camden or Camden County, I'm also in an overburdened community in Atlantic City. If my organization, which is a private organization, ABC, I can be a partner with both Camden, the city of Camden, and the city of Atlantic City, and Atlantic City.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. Those are my questions. Thank you.
Great. All right. Any other questions for Jen? If we have no other questions for Jen, can I get a motion to approve?
Motion to approve, Dragon.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Second?
Glover, second.
Thank you, Aisha. Any more discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's move on.
I'm abstaining on this one. I think a little more work needs to be done. I think that we do a lot of coming back, so I abstain.
Okay. Next item, New Jersey Innovation Fellows Program. Emmanuel Esochai, Diversity Entrepreneurship and Finance Officer, Venture Programs presenting. Emmanuel.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This month, staff is recommending the approval of the New Jersey Innovation Fellows Program, or NJIF. NJIF is authorized through legislation signed into law by Governor Murphy in March 2021. The program is funded through a $10 million appropriation to provide fellowship grants to teams of entrepreneurs who lack sufficient resources to launch their own innovation enterprises, and in particular to diverse entrepreneurs who typically lack the necessary access to capital. The fellowship provides a base award of $200,000 per approved team of at least three first-time entrepreneurs in the form of income replacement grants that will allow individuals operating in an eligible municipality the capacity to focus full-time on building their innovative enterprises. Teams may access up to $200,000 in additional bonus awards, resulting in a total award of $400,000. That will be dispersed to teams in good standing that meet required milestones on a quarterly basis. Bonuses will consist of $50,000 per team award. If one entrepreneur resides in an opportunity zone, teams may also earn an additional bonus of up to $150,000, comprised of up to three $50,000 bonuses for each entrepreneur that self-certifies as a woman or minority founder or is a graduate of a New Jersey college or university. As a critical element of support to teams of entrepreneurs, grant recipients will be required to participate in a mentorship program. Statistics shows businesses who undergo mentoring have a higher rate of success to generate sales and raise additional capital. to ensure equitable access to a high-quality specialized program and to facilitate entrepreneur compliance, the authority will seek to enter an MOU with the New Jersey Innovation Institute and Rowan University Center of Innovation and Entrepreneurship. These partners will provide a semi-custom offering that works to specifically support innovative businesses through a general operations curriculum, as well as access to unique subject matter experts that may offer specialized mentorship to fellowship teams. This board memo serves to notify the board of the plan to pursue this engagement, which, pursuant to the authority's policy regarding MOU scope and cost, may be executed by the CEO. The NJIF program structure will offer or feature four distinct application periods over the course of the fellowship's two-year tenure or until funds are exhausted. Staff anticipates 50 applications per application window. Of these, 5 to 8 will be presented to the board for approval, resulting in approximately grants to 30 newly founded businesses in New Jersey. EDA will charge a 5% administrative fee to the program to cover administrative expenses and the cost of the mentorship program. Applications, including the applicant's well-written business plan, will be accepted twice annually and evaluated by a staff committee. As a key element of the review process, finalists' applications will be reviewed in conjunction with the to-be-formed Diversity Finance Advisory Board. This volunteer body will be assembled by NJEDA, comprised of a diverse panel of experts with experience in finance and operations. The body members will be selected by the CEO of the authority and will function as a sounding board and an ad hoc resource to support NJEDA's efforts to develop the diverse innovation ecosystem in the state. Ongoing monitoring will be required of the businesses. Failure to demonstrate compliance may result in termination of the agreement, resulting in loss of future award milestone payments or recapture of the grant disbursed to date. We appreciate your consideration for approval of the New Jersey Innovation Fellows Program, a foundational tool that will deliver support to diverse entrepreneurs with critical seed funding, mentorship, and facilitate economic growth and job creation, with an investment in talent critical to New Jersey's vibrant innovation ecosystem. I'm available for any comments or questions.
Thanks, Manus. Before we have any questions for Manus, adding in, this is part of a suite of tools we're developing. Sometimes soon we'll have the Black and Latino Seed Fund before this board for consideration. But really trying to make a big push, and Manus leading the charge on it, around diversity and inclusion within the innovation ecosystem. One of the barriers, lots of people start companies because they already have a fair bit of money and can take the risk of leaving their job and saying, screw it, I'm going to bet on myself. And those tend to be disproportionately white men. This program is designed to help broaden and diversify who has the resources available to take that risk and say, hey, I got a cool business idea, but I can't really float myself for 2 years without a salary. Let's take a shot. So this is kind of a first-in-the-country model, not without some risks. Some of these companies are going to fail pretty spectacularly. Some of these are going to do great. That's the nature of the exercise. So it's a portfolio approach, but it's a really touchstone example of the governor's commitment to inclusive innovation, inclusive entrepreneurship. So it's worth the risks.
Tim, it's Jenny Bauer. I just want to comment, to me, the 5% administration fee is very modest, considering it looks like there'll be a lot of hand-holding here. So I just want to commend the agency on being able to, again, support this program, which I think sounds really great, and, being very cost-efficient, certainly for the grantees. So, anyway.
Thank you,
Jenny. Do we have any questions?
I just have two quick questions. Do we have an anticipated number of fellows? That's my first question. And then my second is, are NJIT and Rowan kind of using existing programs and criteria, or would they essentially be building out a new program?
Thank you for those questions. Yes, the total fellows expected to be awarded in this program would be about 30 new businesses, and these would be 30 teams. So the teams could be at least a minimum of three and up to however many they may be. And in terms of NJIT and Rowan, we asked them to develop a world-class program, and they did give us a customized program that was out of the budget that we had set for them. So we're working with that initial blueprint. We went back and selected a curriculum through the existing programs that would maximize the benefits to the extent possible of the initial customized program, but then at a much cheaper cost.
Got it. Thank you. And then my last point, I guess maybe just a comment. I think this is a great program for sure, and would like to encourage us all to just think about where there's connectivity to other programs or more broader goals as well. So I can think of, you know, using this as a feeder for business attraction and retention, or startup attraction or retention. I know programs like NJ Ignite, so you could think about how this could be a pipeline for some of our other programs and efforts, but I do commend the Fellows program, and I'm looking forward to its launch.
Thank you, Aisha. Yeah, this is about as early stage as you can get. These are companies that are thinking about taking the plunge, so yeah, this is ideally a feeder program. You know, hopefully the graduates of this will, you know, come knocking on NVP's door or the Black Latino Seed Fund's door looking for, you know, seed and, you know, early stage financing and being the Ignite firm. So couldn't agree with you more. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, this is Rosemary. I have a couple questions. One of the things that you said for the eligibility is minority women or a graduate of a New Jersey college. Is that correct? So it's one of the three buckets?
No. That's not the eligibility, but the legislation does specify a diversity or education bonus. So in the event that any of the entrepreneurs on the entrepreneurship team are able to self-certify as a minority or provide evidence of graduation from a New Jersey college or university, then we can give them an additional bonus leading up to maximization of $100,000.
Okay. I agree with the folks that I think this is a good start. But I just have a couple clarifying and maybe that questions on structure itself. So we're paying the university, whether it's Rowan or Rutgers, a fee that's separate from the $200,000, or is that fee part of the $200,000? That's the first question. Second question is, I know that we're focusing on folks that are new to entrepreneurship, and the payment, if I'm not mistaken, or the payment to these folks, if it's 33 hours or 35 hours, it's going to be about $33,300. If it's 40 hours, it's $37,400, correct? And it's a full-time commitment in terms of classroom study, meaning 40 hours a week, and because I think there's a break out there of 33 or 35 and 40 hours. So that means that they're in a classroom environment full-time.
Thank you for this question. On the mentorship cost, the cost for the for funding our partners will come from the 5% fee. Additionally, we have to remember that there is an application fee that will be associated with this. And those will offset the cost for the mentorship program. And in terms of the full-time, the mentorship is in conjunction with the businesses developing their individual respective enterprises. So not only while the mentorship program will run during the course of the two-year participation for the entrepreneurs, it will not be all that the entrepreneurs will be doing. They definitely have classroom work where they get to learn the technical mechanics of business development, financial statements analysis, go go-to-market strategies, developing the target market area. These are all very technical aspects of entrepreneurship that they will be learning within a classroom structure, but there are other features within the mentorship program that literally allows them to go out there and test their business plan cases to make sure that their models are, in fact, effective and, in fact, go ahead and grow their business.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. My other question is regarding, you said there's an application fee. What is this is the application fee for the folks that want to participate in the program. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. The authority has a standard application fee of $1,000. But given the nature of the group that we'll be targeting, we have recommended a $250 application fee per applicant for the specific program.
Well, I guess $250, if we're saying that your average applicant is going to be someone that's making $33,000 a year, that they're leaving a job to go into entrepreneurship, I think we may want to look at that number because, there's no guarantee that they're going to be accepted. So the same concern that we had about the previous program where we were waiving or removing that $1,000 application fee, I think $250 on a $33,000 a year person because it's going to present that same challenge. And I say that one of the reasons I say that is that $33,000 is more of an entry level $16 an hour person, which means that you're not going to pull folks that are going into marketing, branding, and some of the higher, more professional positions. You're looking at more entry level sort of jobs, entrepreneurship. So it's a different beast. So I think that should be a consideration. And then the other question I have is, did you say that the person had to have a business plan as part of the application?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
I guess I would have that same concern because if I'm new to entrepreneurship, part of the programs that support should be how to write a business plan or how to write a pitch deck. So you're, again, putting me at a disadvantage because most folks that are coming from regular employment may not have any experience or know how to put together a business plan. So I just think that those sort of things need to have a little more consideration. I think the program is concept is wonderful, but possibly we need to think through a couple more things before we launch. So thank you.
Rosemary, Tim, thanks for your questions. I appreciate the program. Morning. A couple of things. On the fee, so our standard fee is $1,000. Our standard fee in our rules says it's $1,000. This is already a 75% discount on that fee. Certainly something we can keep our eye on. If we are finding that is deterring applicants, we can always come back and adjust that.
And the fee split, presumably by, it would be divided by three entrepreneurs.
That's true. That's a great point. So it's split among potentially three people. So it's $80 a head, plus or minus. On the business plan point, I think I might see it a little differently than you do, but it is certainly something we can keep our eye on. If they don't have a business plan and an idea for what they're going to do, as we're thinking about investing public dollars, I'm not sure how we would evaluate whether they're, ready for the program. So I think we've got to have some, way to evaluate what they're going to do.
Maybe focus more on a pitch deck and give folks a template or something, but a business plan is huge. And I have years of experience, and every time I have to do a business plan, it's a major undertaking. I have clients that have gone through programs and walk away without a business plan because it's mind-boggling for a lot of folks, and it sort of stymies them. And it's like a deer caught in headlights of where do I start, what do I do, how do I phrase, et cetera. So maybe something that provides more of a template and responses than having a full-blown business plan, but, you know, focus more on a pitch deck style than business plan style, because I think you're going to lose people. Or you're going to get a lot of garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah, I jump in very quickly here as well. I initially was kind of thinking along the same lines as you were, Tim, but hearing Rosemary, it's making me think about when I ran the City of Newark's Economic Development Corporation and how many entrepreneurs we were servicing that really had strong ideas, and they were coming in for support around a business plan. So maybe it's some tweaking around how we're defining that. I hear you loud and clear. EDA is going to need something to be able to review and assess the applications. And I think if we're intentional about thinking about how we define that or how we describe it as a proposal or overview or summary or something, where these entrepreneurs don't think they then have to go out and figure out a pretty intensive typical business plan that they might otherwise get by participating in this program.
Yeah, I think.
If I may, the statute itself requires a well-written business plan to apply. However, it is up to EDA if somebody applies and doesn't have that, whether there's coaching or help to get to the application stage.
Yes, and we can certainly, statute point was one point I was going to make, thank you, Gabriel. And then the second is, you know, we can certainly, the template idea is a good one, Rosemary, and Aisha, I think that's a good one. There are ways to do that. Emmanuel, go ahead.
And if I may, the template idea is that's what we are implementing. We our intent was to include a template within the board memo, but in lieu of that, what we've done is that we're creating an FAQ. And we are including a template in an FAQ that we published on the website that will give exactly the format, which is a pitch deck format that we would be using. The mentorship program, as they're going through, a part of it is developing a robust and well thought out business plan. So that is part of them, going through the business, mentorship program. But in for the application, we expect a template that will be in a pitch deck format, about 10 slides or less, and that's exactly what we would be evaluating.
I just know from experience, both from venturing out on my own as well as going through programs like a LIEDA, like economic development program, workforce economic development program, et cetera, that I think, you know, if we're saying that we want to help you, then we need to make sure that the program that we put in front of you understands where people are. And I think sometimes we build programs when we're not meeting people where they are, but where we aspire them to be. And I think I like the idea of it, and I think it's great. I just think we need to maybe think through some more components of this program before a launch. But I just strongly, I still get it, almost every week somebody's coming because they need help. And the people leave programs without business plans because of the help that they're not receiving or they don't understand it. And when you put a person in front of something like this, where it's a great thing, especially subsidizing income, I think that's great. And it's a wonderful start. But we also have to help them get across that entrance. Because if not, we've excluded a group of people that has an unintended consequence. I think it needs more work, a little more work before we do anything with it. So thank you.
So, Tim, it's Kevin Quinn. Just listening to the comments here, I mean, obviously the EDA can't change the state statute that has made this program possible. And so my thought or question is, if what we find, if in fact we approve this program today, that a business plan, a well-written business plan, is an impediment, there's two things we can do. One, is that we work with people to help them create a well-written business program, which will be time-intensive on the part of the EDA, but to satisfy the requirements of the statute, or we have to go, we don't approve this, and we go back to the legislature, and they may or may not, in light of all the other business they have in front of them, make any changes to the statute, and we have no program, correct?
I think that accurately summarizes the situation, yes. I think it's not insurmountable. The former scenario you described, I don't think it's insurmountable. I think we have between some templates and some coaching, and again, I don't think we're going to see thousands of applications for this program. I think we're going to see dozens of applications for this program. It would be great. So there's intentionally a bit of intensity around it, but I think we'll be able to manage through it.
Well, I think that there's also a third option, guys. We're using the term business plan. Unless there's a very clear definition, I think there's some wiggle room there. Can we do a simplified simplified business plan and put some other language on that that is not as robust? You know, where
I'll offer an opinion. We're about to give people $400,000 if they can't have a business plan of any sort. I promise we'll get in trouble several years from now for giving $400,000 to people who can't do a template of a business plan. I understand the concern, and we want to help people get there, but that's also $400,000. It's not my money.
And I do have to remind the board members that what we are requiring, we are the as staff, is a deck of 10 slides or less. And the goal of that deck is for the entrepreneurs to fully and, you know, effectively express their ideas and where it will be domiciled, who will be managing the businesses, and their qualifications for managing the businesses. And then there will be, once approved, they will be immediately enrolled into the mentorship program, which will help them further develop their go-to-market strategies or addressing their total market area, or developing their financial acumen. These are all part of the broader business plan. But initially, we're just requiring a template of 10 slides or less that effectively expresses the idea.
Thank you for that clarification, Ms. Aisha. I'd feel comfortable with that.
Yeah. This is Michelle. Can I add something? I'm on the line. I'm sorry. Rosemary and Aisha, but I hear your concerns. Emmanuel, team, Tim, Kathleen, myself, we have really looked at this program as, a way for us to start the wheel, right? And so do we see this as perfect in form? Perhaps not, but we do feel strongly that we want to get this program started and get it out there, because a business plan template, I think, is not going to be a barrier for folks to get involved with this program. We're going to be very hands-on with it. Tim is going to be selecting the members that are inclusive of this work group and panel. And so I think your concerns are absolutely, warranted, and we hear them, but we also have an eye to just what you're saying. So we're mindful of it. I don't think that we should hold up the program to take this time that I don't think is needed. I think the time right now is we move forward with the program, we feel strongly about it, and we will, to the chairman's point, look to see if, as we progress along, if this business plan piece is in fact an impediment. But I don't believe that. I don't believe it at all. I think we're going to be very close to it, and I think we're going to ensure that we can get people through the finish line.
Thank you, Michelle. Do we have other questions or comments for Emmanuel or about the program itself?
This is Rosemary, and I'll just make one last comment. I think that the business plan was just one example. I'm not saying that we're necessarily going to hang our hat on that, but I think it's an example of a thought process and making sure. we get one chance to initially make an impression as to that support. And I don't think maybe taking a step back for a month and maybe doing a deeper dive on some of the components of this and some of the unintended consequences. Again, another example is fees. You know, we came back, we approved something in September. We came back in November to make an adjustment of a program. So it doesn't always have to be fast. Sometimes we need to be slow. It doesn't have to be perfect. I'm just saying that I think maybe we can make it a little better. And I understand what everyone is saying. And just one last thought on a business plan, whether it's somebody that makes $40,000 or whatever. When I started my business, I made a lot more than $40,000. I was six figures, and I didn't know how to do a business plan. So I don't think that we should make an assumption that if they can't do something, it means that they can't pass the program. So I'll leave it at that, and thank you for listening.
All right. Any other comments or questions? Can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Dragon, second.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Any more discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed?
Ms. Rosemary, I oppose.
Any recusals or abstentions? All right. We're going to move on to the incentives portion of our agenda. Jenny Bauer, our chair, would you like to make a few comments before we dive in?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The incentive committee met on November 2nd, and it was a brief but always important meeting, and I believe we just have one item today, which is the film and digital media tax credit, and Matthew will present that for us. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jenny. So the first item on the agenda, Universal Television, LLC, Matt Sestrich, Senior Program Officer, Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Programs presenting. Matt.
Thank you, Chairman. We have a short presentation today as we only have one project in front of you guys today. EDA staff has completed the review and recommends the approval of this application under the Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program. We have received written confirmation from an outside firm hired to review the production budget to make sure it is reasonable within industry standards. The film content has also been reviewed and recommended for approval under the Act by the New Jersey Motion Picture and Television Commission. This project under consideration is for Universal Television LLC, who is responsible for the production of The Best Man. This project includes a 2% diversity bonus, and we are recommending an award of $15,811,024. I'm happy to answer any questions about this project.
Do we have any questions for Matt? If there's no questions for Matt, can I get a motion to approve?
Ms. Rosemary, I motion to approve.
Thank you, Rosemary. Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's move to New Jersey Accelerate. They have an applicant, Renovate Robotics, Inc., Monica Athwell, Senior Product Officer, Innovation Programs presenting. Monica.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm presenting the NJ Accelerate Loan Benefit Application for Renovate Robotics, a Hacks Accelerator graduate. The NJ Accelerate is a pilot program in which the NJ EDA partners with best-in-class accelerators. We currently have 5 approved accelerators in the program. HACS is an accelerator located in Newark and was approved to participate in NJ Accelerate in April 2022. HACS provides capital investments along with hands-on collaboration and support for early-stage founders building hard-tech startups and addressing complex issues such as decarbonization, automated supply chain, digital manufacturing, and industrial efficiency. HACS is one of the many programs run by SOSB, a venture capital firm with more than $1.3 billion in assets and more than 300 investments per year, including 100-plus pre-seed rounds. Renovate Robotics is the first graduate from HACS for the approval consideration. The company graduated from HACS in August 2022. It is a construction technology company working to automate the installation of shingles and solar panels on single-family residences. The company is projecting to launch its first systems and generate sales by the end of the first quarter of 2023. Renovate Robotics has two employees, Andy Stolk and Adam Bulber. Andy is the company's CEO. He graduated from Notre Dame with a mechanical engineering degree and has 11 years of machine design, robotics, and automation experience. Adam is the company's software executive. He graduated from Johns Hopkins with a mechanical engineering degree. He led software design at Truck Labs and also worked in research and development at Honda and Polaris. HACS invested $250,000 in Renovate Robotics. This investment consisted of $150,000 in cash and $100,000 in-kind services. The NJ Accelerate loan benefit will match the $150,000 in cash portion of the HACS investment. The NJ Accelerate loan has a 10-year term with a fixed interest rate of 3%. The loan has no payments for the first 84 months and is unsecured and includes a warrant equal to 50% of the loan amount. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions for Monica? We have no questions for Monica. Can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Giblin, second.
Second. Yeah.
Thank you, Noreen. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
Aisha Glover, I'm going to recuse. I sit on the advisory board for HACS.
Thank you, Aisha. Moving to the Hazardous Discharge Site Remediation Fund, Hamilton Landfill Project, Michael Dealey, Program Manager, DEP Programs Underwriting, presenting. Michael.
Thank you. Good morning. Under DEP's Hazardous Discharge Site Remediation Fund program, we have one municipal application seeking approval. The Township of Hamilton has applied for a supplemental grant in the amount of $2,996,616. Proceeds will be used to fund costs associated with the remedial action that's been approved by DEP for completion at a former landfill site. The township's intent to complete the remediation of the property and redevelop the site for renewable energy generation. I'll take any questions.
Any questions for Michael? We have no questions for Michael. Can I get a motion to approve?
Got it.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
This is Rosemary. I'll second.
Thank you, Rosemary. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Thank you, Michael. Moving on, New Jersey Windport bond issuance, official intent resolution. Daniel Sommer, Senior Project Officer, Legal and Commercial Infrastructure, presenting. Daniel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everyone. The item that you have before you is an official intent resolution for an anticipated bond issuance for purposes of financing the next phase of construction of the New Jersey Windport project. For those of you who are unfamiliar with this type of resolution, this is a resolution that typically precedes an anticipated bond issuance, which is required by U.S. Treasury regulations for purposes of enabling cost reimbursements from tax-exempt bond proceeds. Important to note here that we are not seeking approval today of the ultimate bond issuance. The details of the intended issuance to be presented to the board are currently under consideration and in discussion with NJ Treasury and Bond Council. We are anticipating bringing that issuance to the board for consideration in Q1 of 2023. a few key points to hit in relation to the resolution itself, the one before you today. The resolution establishes a not to exceed for the eventual bond issuance of $160 million. This figure was determined in conjunction with NJ Treasury and is inclusive of a couple of items, one of them, which is the NJEDA's determined financial need for CY 2023 construction activities at the New Jersey Wind Port. That's a total of $145 million estimated construction activities and costs. And then in addition to that, issuance costs and issuance contingency as determined in discussion with bond advisors. The other key point in relation to the resolution is it establishes a 60-day look-back period created by the resolution's adoption, which would be applicable to the reimbursements of prior costs only in the event that the issuance included tax-exempt bonds. Important to note here that we are not certain at this point as to whether or not the bonds to be issued will be eligible for tax exemption. Indications thus far that they may not be. We're currently working on that with our bond advisors. However, the goal here is merely to preserve any right to reimbursement pending the final details of that issuance. So there will be more to come on the eventual issuance that will be coming before the board in Q1 of next year. But as to the resolution that you have in your materials, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Do we have any questions for Daniel? If we have no questions for Daniel, can I get a motion to approve?
Giplin, so moved.
Thank you. Noreen, can I get a second?
Caridi, seconds.
Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item, New Jersey Wind Port requests to approve the authority entering into a long lead materials purchase agreement with Atlantic City Electric. John Keeney, Director, Legal and Commercial Wind Infrastructure, New Jersey Wind and Infrastructure, presenting. John.
Good morning. The Wind Port requests the board to approve a entering into a long lead items agreement with Atlantic City Electric, ACE I'll refer to moving forward, for an amount not to exceed $20 million in order to secure specialty items that will be needed for the construction of a 12-mile transmission line needed to power the wind port. This request is part of a series before the board. The first was in 2021 to authorize the feasibility study to figure out the best way to get power to the wind port. The second was earlier this year to approve a design agreement to allow ACE to design the preferred alternative from that feasibility study. The next logical step would be to construct what was designed. Design is currently at 60%. And so although the parties are in the process of working on the construction contract, given the current state of market conditions and the specialty nature of these materials, we believe it's necessary to enter into this agreement at this stage in order to ensure that the materials are secure by the time that we're ready to enter the construction phase for this transmission line. ACE is a franchise electric provider in the region. They are the franchise electric provider in the region, and as a result, EDA is required to work with them to get power to the wind port. The power is needed to make the wind port operational in time for its first expected tenant in 2024. ACE is also, because it is a utility provider regulated by BPU, and will be procuring the materials through a competitive bid process. ACE has provided the estimated cost for the materials. We are building in a 15% contingency based on current market conditions. That total amount of materials is not to exceed, as I said before, just shy of under $20 million. The EDA would be responsible for the actual costs of the materials. If the materials were to exceed that $20 million threshold, then we would be returning to the board for additional review as necessary. The funds needed for this procurement are already allocated to the project. They are allocated to construction of Parcel A. There is a $30 million contingency that is built into that funding stream. We would be looking to reallocate 20 of that $30 million for this procurement. This agreement is important to secure these items ahead of construction for the transmission line to ensure that we can deliver the port on time to our first tenant. This agreement has been approved in principle by Comptroller. Comptroller is currently finishing its compliance check to ensure that everything is needed that needs to be there. This board approval would be subject to OSC's final approval. Happy to answer any questions.
Great. Do we have any questions for John? We have no questions for John. Can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Second, Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, that we're done with the voting portion of our agenda. Tim, board memoranda.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members have in their packs six delegated authority update memos. As we're doing, having more delegated authority, we'll have more delegated authority memos going forward. A couple things I'd highlight under some of the environmental programs, the environmental remediation program, the HCSRF program had seven approvals, 62 approvals in the PUST program, the petroleum underground storage tank program. So a good reminder that lots happens at these meetings and lots happens in between these meetings in terms of staff activity and approvals. And happy to answer any questions on any of those memos or yield the floor back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Any questions, comments for Tim? All right. I'd now like to open the public comment portion of the meeting. First, I'd like to ask Danielle Esser to read the EDA's public comment policy and process for this telephonic board meeting. Danielle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As stated in NJEDA's public comment policy, members of the public who wish to speak during the public comment period in person and registered to speak will be acknowledged to speak during the public comment portion of the meeting, as well as any members of the public who are in person. Members of the public attending by phone who are interested in providing public comment can press 1 then 0 on their phone keypad, which will place each person into the queue based on the order received. The public comment policy is as follows. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization, affiliation, and the topic on which remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit comments to matters pertaining to the authority. The speaker once their time has expired, and a speaker may not speak more than once during the same public comment period to ensure there's enough time for all of those who wish to speak. Lastly, speakers may provide related documents, printed comments, or materials attached to email. Thank you, and we look forward to receiving your public comments at this time.
Ladies and
gentlemen. I'm sorry. Lastly, I just want to acknowledge that Aisha Glover had to leave the call, and Virginia Bauer has to leave at 11:30. Thank you.
Sorry about that. I was on mute. I do not believe we have any members of the public who are registered to speak in person. Are there any other members of the public who wish to provide public comment at this time? Operator, if you could go over the procedures for providing public comment, just to see if anybody out there would like to comment.
Thank you, and ladies and gentlemen, for the members of the public on the phones, if you wish to ask a question, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. And if you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the number. Once again, if you have a question, please press 1, then 0 at this time. And one moment for our first question. And at this time, there are no questions in queue.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, operator. If there are no additional comments, I'd like to thank everyone for their participation. I'll now make a motion to adjourn the meeting. Can I get a second?
Yes, second, Robert Shimko.
Thank you, everyone. All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye.
This concludes our meeting.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T conferencing service. You may now disconnect.